And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post podcast, where Jackie McMullen made the mistake of informing me that she was in Denver, Colorado to watch the most fun of these very fun, well, three very fun anyway, second round playoff series. And I said, well, that's it. You got to come on and do a podcast. I haven't talked about this in podcast form so much. And of course, you got to see a complete blowout, a night of blowouts last night. Jackie, how are you?
I'm great, Zach. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, come on. Are you kidding me? It's ridiculous that you come on this stupid podcast, but we're happy to have you on. So are you having as much? I mean, last night was not so fun because Denver just waxed Portland, but this has been such a delightful, it's been such a delightful series.
It has. And I just was talking to Christina when I was in LA last week doing the jump. I said, I want in. I want to go. And I was, my nephew is graduating, shout out to Christopher Tatone, graduating from Boulder on Thursday. I said, I'll go in a couple days early. Let me in on this. Because there, I feel like the Denver Nuggets are kind of like my children, Zach, because I was there earlier, very early in the season, you know, did a long piece on Jamal, spent a bunch of days with them. And I tell everybody the same thing. I walked in there and 4 days later walked out and said, this is the best vibe in the NBA right now. They had such a positive vibe between the coaches, the players. So I'm happy for them that it's translated into this, because it doesn't always, as you know.
So you wrote a wonderful profile of the Jamal Murray. So why don't we start there? And it was a few months ago, and it was about his relationship with his father, how hard he was pushed. Right. And I'd forgotten some of the delightful details in there, like his father would make him hold a perfect squat for 12 minutes. And put a cup of hot tea on top of his thigh so that if he quivered or got out of position, he would presumably burn himself with hot tea.
Right, the tea would spill. Yeah.
And he's had such a fascinating playoffs because he was so, for the first 12 quarters against San Antonio, he was completely out of sorts for 11 of them. And the 12th was the fourth quarter when they came back to win game two, which they absolutely had to have. And since then, I think he's pretty much steadied himself and had not a crazy good playoffs, but a very good playoffs, and kind of showed himself to be the kind of scorer who can score from all levels of the floor and handle the ball in creative ways and make difficult in-between shots that I really do think becomes more valuable in the playoffs than they are in the regular season. So I don't know if you got to catch up with him, because he's always kind of in and out of his own head. Now he seems to be out of it. What did you get to talk to him at all?
I did. I talked to him a couple different times. And I think, you know, you go back to that San Antonio series. What do the Spurs do? They love to disrupt what you like to do. And they disrupted their vaunted pick and roll with Jokic and Murray and the pick and pop with Millsap. You know, they were disrupting all of that. And I think what's important for Jamal is getting into a rhythm. And so I think as that series went on, Zach, he was seeing the same team over and over, and he was seeing the same coverages over and over. And that's when he started to think, okay, so now I know what they're going to do. How am I going to counter? And I think this is what makes Murray and Jokic so special, both of them. They have this real instinct for being able to establish, you know, figure out the reads of the defense. And I don't think that's a small skill set, by the way. And I think both of them have worked very hard of it. They've watched a lot of film. They watch film together, which I just found out. I didn't know that was the case.
That's got to be. I would love to be a part of that conversation.
Oh, believe me, I tried, man. But I do want to also give a shout out to the wonderful David Adelman, who spent some time with me yesterday breaking down some Denver film.
Denver and I assistant a lot from coach him. And Rick's son.
Right. And just really smart. Passionate guy. And so I think when you look at what Jamal's doing, he's just, and it's the same thing in this series, in the Portland series, he's looking at what they're trying to take away, and he's countering it. As Jokic said to me the other day, whatever the defense is trying to do, we do the opposite. And what a wonderful luxury to have when you have two players that are so in sync with one another that you can actually make that happen.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up sort of his feel, because I think that's actually an underrated part of his game. I think he's a very smart player. And when he and Jokic start their little dance, and it's a dance, like they're doing stuff. They're doing stuff out there that there are not a lot of two-man games like that. He has just a great feel for, all right, what's the defense doing? Okay, so they did this. Huh, okay, what's a good end game for me? A good end game for me is if I can get a switch. Because if I get a switch, I got this big old Fennis Canner on me, and Nikola Jokic has someone who's not big enough to deal with him on him. And, okay, right. So I kind of got him leaning this way. Okay, they're like 50% of the way towards a switch. Okay, if I drive really hard at Enes Kanter right now, I can probably solidify that switch. Or sometimes it's, okay, they're only 25% of the way there. Maybe I'll go back around this screen, hesitation, dribble, whatever. And he has a feel for how to get a switch solidified that at his age and his experience level to me is very, very impressive. And if you give Jokic a switch, forget about it. It's over. He is mowing you over and scoring.
It really is, and it's so fascinating to watch. You know, the game last night, here's a stat for you, Zach. Jamal Murray had 9 assists last night, career playoff high. The team shot a perfect 100% on his 9 passes.
Wow.
9 for 9.
9 potential assists, yeah.
I mean, that's like, that doesn't happen. And, you know, the other thing about him, and I guess I'm stealing some of the thunder of the piece I'm going to have coming out in a few days.
Don't steal
but I
too
think
much
that's
thunder.
Okay. No, I won't. But one of the things that I did talk to some Hall of Famers about these guys, this pick and roll, and give it a little historical perspective, and I won't share too much of that. But the one thing that just everybody says over and over is Jamal Murray, their best action between Murray and Jokic in this postseason has been Murray setting the pick.
It's been that way. It's all year it's been that way.
It's like unbelievable. And I mean, nobody else is doing that. Nobody. Not that I know of. I haven't seen anybody been doing that. And it takes like, you have to be physical. And if you don't think Murray's tough, just watch him set those screens and the physicality that he absorbs setting those screens. It's incredible.
He did it even with Millsap once last night, which is a combination we haven't used much. And let's just take a second. Paul Millsap is destroying the Blazers
one by one.
First it was Al-Farouq Aminu. And they were he posted him over and over again. And then off the bench, it's been Evan Turner. And that's barbecue chicken time for Paul Millsap. Mm-hmm. Evan Turner's got no chance. And last night, in a move that I thought was a bad move, and we'll talk about that later, Terry Stotts juggled the assignments so that Aminu was on Jokic and Kanter was on Millsap. I said, okay, you know, Kanter should be able to – Kanter's bigger and stronger than Millsap. And Millsap's not as quick as he used to be. I don't know that they can really take advantage of that. Oh, yes, they did. Yes, they did. Paul Millsap, barbecue chicken, Enes Kanter, too. And they drew up some nice sets, I thought, specifically to leverage his speed advantage. Here's a stat for you. I looked it up on our little fancy second spectrum. Points per post-up in this series. Paul Millsap, 1.23 points per post-up. To put that in perspective, the best offense in the entire league is about 1.15. So Paul Millsap is outdoing that just on post-ups, and he had a couple of plays last night where he looked like Draymond Green on defense. So Draymond's been doing that thing to Houston where he gets in a one-on-two situation,
right,
and it's Harden and Capella, and he's in between, and somehow he's the predator, and they're the prey, and he deflects the lob pass. Millsap had a couple of those exact kind of plays last night, including one where he just took his two giant hands and took the ball from somebody. He's had an incredible series.
He really has, and you know, give Mike Malone credit too, Zach, because he determined very early on in the series. I think this is the first time where we can really start saying, boy, they really miss Nurkic, because up to this point they've done such a wonderful job of hiding that you know, very big loss for them. But Mike Malone made up his mind, like, all right, yeah, we're always gonna have Jokic and Murray, but we're gonna post Millsap deep. And we're going to post him over and over and over again. And the thing I like about this Denver team is, you know, when you're running that pick and roll with Murray and Jokic, it takes up space, right? It takes, you know, you have to give them space. And the way these guys, the rest of the guys on the team have, again, instincts, and Millsap's really good at this too. It's just knowing when, all right, I got to clear out. I got to, you know, I'm flattening out down below and I got to clear out. I give these guys a ton of credit because they're spacing with Millsap and the post, whatever action they're running. It's really something else.
Yeah, I agree.
It's the future of the NBA. This is the way the NBA is going to be played going forward.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Nurkic, because I do feel like that's kind of gotten, you know, they beat Oklahoma City fairly easily in short order. I mean, not easily maybe in terms of margin, but they beat them in five. And they're up 3-2 in this series. I'm sorry, Portland beat Oklahoma City. Yeah, Portland beat Oklahoma City.
Right.
They're down 3-2 in this series. You know, they're a good team without Nurkic. Denver, if they make the conference finals, there will be a whole barrage of, well, this is the next great team in the Western Conference. And I think they're a very good team. I've been high on Denver all year. I predicted they would beat the Spurs. I thought they would get home court. Like, this is not to be hateful about Denver. I just kind of feel like I want to preemptively not get carried away because they manipulated the brackets to get all of these matchups, and they did it successfully. Good for them. They barely beat the Spurs, and I mean as barely as you can barely beat them. And the Spurs are not very good. And they are squeaking out this series until last night. Now, if they go to Portland and win in six, that's a great win. They're squeaking out this series over a team that I think is finally starting to show some signs, and in particular Lillard, of we're kind of down a big, big piece. And that's not to take anything away from Denver. You can only beat who's in front of you. I just think it kind of reminds me of Toronto the year they made the conference finals, where they barely beat the Pacers in seven, and then they beat the Heat in seven. It's like, oh, we're a conference finals team. I'm like, kind of. You know what I mean?
Right. But this is what I would say to counter that. And they have a decision to make. As you know, Zach, Millsap's on the books next year for $30 million. $30 million.
It's a lot of millions.
And it is. And I'm pretty sure it's a club option, and there was some confusion about that, I guess. So, you know, do you decide we're going for it, and you're not going to pay him. I don't think you're going to pay him $30 million. Maybe you can agree. You can both agree to pay him a smaller number. Cause I don't know anyone that, as great as Paul Millsap has been, we just sang his praises of who's going to pay him $30 million. So that's a decision. But you know what I was thinking? Cause I walked past him last night, and he's so much taller than I thought. Michael Porter is on this team.
Yep.
I mean, my goodness, if he's anything like we have been led to believe, they really do have a chance to be special. Now, you've got to be better defensively. You just have to. And Jamal Murray's got to be better defensively. And he's athletic, and he's smart, and he's tough. And he's got to be a better defender, because he's not a good defender. I mean, there's no other way to describe it.
And he's been almost worse, I think, in the playoffs than in the regular season, because teams are targeting him.
That's it. Ed, just as, you know, that was one of the interesting subplots to this, right? Portland was targeting Murray on defense, and obviously the Nuggets have been targeting Lillard on defense.
Oh, and back to that, I think Lillard is getting tired.
Oh, he's exhausted. You can tell. You can see it.
He's shooting 25% from three in this series, and he's getting looks, particularly in the last two games, that are good looks for him. They're good looks. They know how to get him good looks now. You flip the screen around. It's a second screen. Jokic can't keep up. And he's just missing them. And if you watch the possessions where CJ McCollum is running the offense, and this began really to show itself in game three, which was the four overtime marathon, and I think a little bit in game two, Dame isn't doing anything. He's standing out there on the wing like Russell Westbrook does. And the difference is, of course, you have to have a guy in his face from 30 feet in because he's Logo Lillard. So he still has value just standing there. But that's not normally how he plays. He runs around, he sets screens, he cuts. He's more stationary off the ball, and he's missing all of these shots. And Denver is doing a very good job of getting him switched onto Jamal Murray, so he has to work on defense. He can't just sit there and hide on Torrey Craig. I think he's getting tired, and not that it goes back to Nurkic, because it's not like they play the same position. It's not like he's had to play more minutes because Nurkic is hurt, but the increased load. Maybe it's the season. He just looks tired to me.
Well, and they're a little more one dimensional with Nurkic out of there. They just are. And last night when I was watching the game, I kept thinking, Portland's got to do something different. They got to do something different than hope McCollum and Lillard are going to pull this out for them. Cantor, what a great story he had been up until, you know, he was pretty much a non-factor last night. He's dealing with that separated shoulder. I talked to him very quickly last night. He's fasting for Ramadan. He seemed a little discouraged last night, which he never is, as you know. Of course, it was right after the game. I totally expect game six to be an incredible game because they're, you know, Lillard, McCollum, these guys, Cantor, they haven't quit. That I can tell you.
No, they're not going to quit. I mean, to me.
No, they really don't. Terry won't let them.
Portland is. It's sometimes almost a boring team in that a lot of their games come down to, do Aminu, Harkless, and Turner make shots? Yes.
Can they give you something?
Yes, you win. No, you lose. Now, Turner hasn't made shots essentially the whole playoffs, so scratch him. Amin.
Well, he doesn't play enough minutes, so, you know, in defense of him, because I was around him a lot in Boston.
I love
him. He's a rhythm player. Yeah, me too, but he needs minutes, and you know, he's just not going to get them in this series. Just not going to get enough of them.
Well, if he made shots, he would. I mean, the counter that is he made shots, he would, but does he need minutes to make shots? I get it.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You know, that's the age-old thing, right? I say the same thing about Terry Rozier in Boston.
I was going to say, we'll talk about that. It's kind of like, are all the Boston young guys playing badly because they weren't as good as we thought, or because they're not getting the opportunity to be as good as they want to be? We'll talk about right. Boston. Aminu and Harkless are 5 of 26 from 3 combined in this series. Yep. That's just not going to get it done. And I thought last night Portland had a couple of plays where they tried to use the fact that the Nuggets are not guarding Aminu against them. And so they kind of used him like the Warriors used Draymond Green. Like, as soon as Paul Millsap went into the lane to help off of Aminu, there were a couple possessions where Aminu ran up and set a ball screen for C.J. McCollum on like a ball reversal. And so if you're not guarding Aminu and now suddenly he's screening, well, C.J. McCollum can go around that screen. Nobody's there. If they didn't make shots, that's smart, but there's only so much you can do. I wonder if we'll even see Terry sort of dare to play Rodney Hood at power forward or Jake Lehman dust him off to play some power forward to try and get four shooters and Cantor on the floor.
No, you know how it goes. Seth Curry, you had a glimpse, right? There was a burst, but it's not sustainable in the way they need it to be sustainable. You know, Rodney Hood's had some moments, hasn't he? He's had some moments.
And you're just going to get killed. If you put him at the four, you're just going to, I get it. Millsap's going to kill you. There's no good, these aren't good answers. And they tried Myers-Leonard. Myers-Leonard is sort of the shooter break in case of emergency card. I don't know that that's going to work in this series either.
No, I don't think it is. Although, you know, I do really like, and I haven't seen him enough, but I've really appreciated Zach Collins. Zach Collins is a lively body. He's, you know, he's learning that we had took a bad technical in that game. Which game was that? Game 4, I think.
Yes, game 4.
But yeah, he's active. I think he's, you know, I think he's going to help them going forward. I don't know about in this series, though.
I'm a big, big fan. And if he becomes a reliable open 3-point shooter, he becomes a very, very interesting player for them because defensively you can tell he's going to be good. He has good verticality around the rim, although sometimes he bonks his arms down and hurts people. But
he's just a little overzealous, right? He's just a young guy who's a little overzealous. I prefer that to someone who's passive.
He had that little Euro step last night. That was beautiful.
He did. Yeah, he's fun to watch.
Yeah, the one thing I'll say is, and this is me not second-guessing but pre-guessing because I wrote about this in the piece I wrote on this series. I said, I wonder if we're going to see Terry Stotts put Aminu on Jokic and Cantor on Millsap just to get more speed on Jokic and more switchability. So, you know, you can switch Harkless and Aminu on the Murray Jokic 2-man game. And I wrote in the piece, I just don't think that's going to work. It's the size advantage that Jokic is going to have is overwhelming. I understand Aminu can, you know, try to wave at his dribble and he's fast and all this. And last night was like my worst fears confirmed because sometimes they didn't even switch. Like Aminu would drop back like a normal pick and roll coverage and Jokic would just lay the ball. What is the point of doing this if you're not going to switch? And then Jokic just bulldozed him and it's an automatic double team and Will Barton's hitting threes and Malik Beasley's hitting threes and Jokic is getting offensive rebounds because he's 6 inches taller or whatever and giant.
Right.
I just didn't like that matchup. I had a feeling the Blazers would go to it I like it on the other end. I like Jokic guarding Aminu on the other end for all the reasons we just talked about. I didn't like that. I thought Terry might try it and I didn't like it and I'm very surprised he stuck with it because Malone did the same thing. He juggled the matchups in a similar way, and he didn't like the way it looked, and they went away from it. Immediately, and that surprised me. I would expect him to go back to that. And Game 6 is going to be interesting because I think Denver believes clearly. They believe they won they have won there before. They believe we can go get the series over there.
Yeah, their confidence is very high right now, and the word that Jamal used with me was composure. He said, we have composure now. I'm not sure we always did. And that's a pretty intelligent thing to say. You know, you were talking about Jokic guarding Aminu. So this is why this is a little bit of a misleading stat, but I'll give you another stat from last night that I liked. Jokic as the primary defender. The Blazers were 3 for 16 from the floor. 19% shooting.
I have been saying on this podcast that he is not, for 2 years, that he's not as bad as he looks. And he's not as bad as people say. Is he good?
Right.
No, I don't think he's
not yet.
Good.
Not yet.
But he's big. He has very good hands. He has very smart feet. He gets in the way. He anticipates. Now, this kind of gets into what I was talking about with I'm not going to go too crazy if Denver makes it, wins the series, because the next matchup is where things get very difficult for him no matter who it is. And that's why they tried to avoid Houston, and everyone wants to avoid Golden State. So, yes, there are going to be matchups where his lack of foot speed and his lack of sort of traditional rim protection is borderline fatal. But they haven't run into one of those matchups yet, and I think he's been perfectly fine on defense. Perfectly fine. I think he's been underrated for 2 years because people think he's laughable because James Harden will cross him up and make him look like an idiot. And that will happen, but I think he's actually okay.
Well, you know, everything about Jokic is a little bit of a misnomer. I mean, this idea that he's not in great shape, it's not true. Now, as I was joking before with, you know, Shaq always said to me, no matter how much I lift weights, no matter what I do, I never get bulked up. I'm not one of those salad eaters. And I always use that term now. I always credit him, but I use it a lot. Jokic is never going to be a salad eater, even if he eats a salad every day for the rest of his life. He's just never going to look the way people want him to look. But don't be confused into thinking that means he's not in shape, because he is. He is in shape. He's playing big minutes.
He's averaging 40 minutes a game in the playoffs.
Right, so don't tell me he's not in shape. That's an old, tired...
40 minutes a game.
Right, so that's just people being lazy, you know.
24 points, 13 rebounds, 9 assists.
And a delight, by the way, a delight, Zach. Just a delightful person with a great sense of humor. He's just really fun to be around.
Also, 1.3 steals and one block a game. And only 2.5 turnovers, considering that he's, again, 9 assists. He's not a little point guard. 9 assists.
No.
Okay, right. I told you I'd get you out of here fast. I cannot have you on without discussing the Boston Celtics. I do not want to bury them while they're alive. And their game tips off in 7.5 hours from our recording of this. Because nothing about them would surprise me. let me say this. If they win tonight, I will be surprised, because this feels like a rollover 1-2-3 Cancun kind of game. But you never know. What you wrote a piece last week about the dismay of Kyrie Irving and his evolving leadership style and how this team has sort of navigated these troubled waters and then appeared to write themselves, winning their first 5 playoff games, including waxing the Bucks in game 1. I guess, like, you know Kyrie, you've gotten to know Kyrie. I have not gotten to know Kyrie. He's unknowable to me. Like, what is, I mean this in the most literal sense. Like, I can't even understand some of the things that he says. Like, what is this dude about? And what is he so, like, unhappy about? Has he ever been able to explain, like, yes, leading young guys, I guess that's kind of a challenge. He's the best player and number one option on a historic franchise with, even if this is a messy season, a bright future one way or another. Like, what's going on?
Well, he's a very complicated person, and I don't pretend to know him. You know, I guess I know him better than some. This is the one thing that I've said this to him, so I can say it to you. Be careful about this search for happiness, because you may never find it. And so his history is interesting. For those who don't know, you know, he went to high school for 2 years. They won 2 state championships, and he transferred to another high school. And I think he's just someone that's always looking for the next challenge, which is a very admirable trait when you're an elite athlete. And I think that was part of the thinking when he left Cleveland. I think in retrospect, he looks back on those days in Cleveland, and maybe he realizes now it wasn't quite the way he saw it. We don't need to rehash all of that. But I do think that the part maybe people are missing is the root of some of his unhappiness, at least from my viewpoint, was this. He says, hey, if you'll have me, I'm going to stay here, because that's how he feels. And he's very much a stream of consciousness talker and thinker, I think, but he's also very much an introvert, and he listens. And if people tell you that they don't listen, he claims, NBA players say they don't listen, they don't read, they don't watch TV, they're lying. Because he does. And I think what happened when things started going a little bad And he started hearing some of the talk radio. And believe me, it was brutal, Zach. Some of the stuff on talk radio in Boston, which can be brutal.
When?
I mean, no one should.
When?
Oh, no. Like, we're talking January.
Okay, you know, so when the season is going sideways.
Yeah, things are going a little sideways. And people are saying, well, they're better without Kyrie, which is utter nonsense, as we all know. I mean, in terms of, you know, he's the best player. He's a genius. He said so himself in my
story. I couldn't believe
he
said that. Some of the things he says, it's like, dude. You just, like, I should
let
take...
Let someone else say that. Let someone else say that about you.
I should take 30 shots in the next game. I can tell you, that did not go over well with all sectors of the Boston Celtics franchise.
Well, of course not. And so the problem you have is he's by far and away your best player. But when things start to go sideways, you know, and it's happened in the third quarter, I feel like, of every game of this series except for the first one, he feels like, all right, it's my job to take care of this. I'm going to do this. And he resorts to taking the ball himself, ISO shots. I always tell everybody, I sit on my couch and count the number of passes they make. If it's two or more, they have a good chance of scoring. If it's two or less, unless, you know, Kyrie makes a spectacular play, which he's certainly capable of doing, they're not going to score. And it disrupts their whole, you know, pace. I think it was Jaylen Brown that said it, the whole idea of pace and space. That's what made them great last year. That's not really what Kyrie does, right? I think Jalen Rose made this point, and he's right. They, you know, Kyrie likes to dominate the ball. Now, he went out of his way to be an assist man, all of that, but that's on the court stuff. Off the court, the stuff that bothered him was he and Kevin Durant talking in a tunnel at an All-Star game, and then people drawing these wild conclusions. I think that would irritate me a little bit too, but it irritates to him in ways you can't even imagine. And then Anthony Davis declares he wants to be traded. And somehow, within the next days, all the talk is centering around Kyrie. Now, he didn't say anything. He didn't tell Anthony Davis to ask to be traded. But now it's like, okay, well, will they trade for Anthony Davis as Kyrie stays? What if he doesn't stay? How close is he? What is he going to do? And then they start leaking stuff about, well, Kyrie's going to leave. He's going to go here. He's going to go there. And meanwhile, Kyrie said nothing to nobody. And it drives him insane. And so finally, you know, Danny and Brad at some point just said, you know, get off social media. And as Terry Rozier said in that piece I wrote last week, you know, he finally deleted his social media stuff because some guys just aren't built for it. And he's one of them. He's not built for it. He listens to what people say. It matters to him what people say. That makes him human, but you've got to do a better job of not letting that spill over into your locker room. You just can't. You can't let it happen.
People are so puzzled around the league about what is going on with him that there
couldn't
are
agree more.
That there
yeah.
are, there are actually executives on other teams who have floated this theory that he's just sort of concocting the appearance of misery in Boston so that he has some built-in sort of foundation for why he leaves to go play with Durant. I'm like, I don't believe that's true.
That's a bit much. I said
the same thing. I was like, that sounds a little crazy to me, but I actually don't blame you for sort of in the vacuum of information about why exactly he seems so miserable in Boston for inventing this crazy theory, because there is a vacuum of information. It's interesting because Nate Silver tweeted this, and it kind of stole something that I wanted to write about their season should they lose. He said, can't their season just sort of be explained by the fact that Tatum didn't take the incremental step that people expected? Brown didn't take the incremental step that people expected. And Gordon Hayward's leg snapped in half, and he's not quite back recovering from it yet. And
yes,
isn't
that's
that
all true.
And I do think there is something to the idea that the Celtics just – and I thought the Celtics – I went on record. I thought they were going to be a 60-win team. I was totally wrong.
Everybody was wrong.
I think we all got ahead of ourselves projecting the talent. Now, the counterargument and the one you're probably going to make is – maybe those guys all regressed or plateaued because of the awkwardness of trying to fit in Kyrie and Hayward. Now, Hayward's a separate story because that's a traumatic injury. It's going to take a year. But the right. awkwardness of fitting in Kyrie and then the sort of resulting emotional toll that took on all of them. And I think, and when Nate Silver tweeted that, there was like a lot of people agreeing, saying, yes, people are just making up the sort of angst within the team in search of a more complex answer. I think it's some a part A and some a part B. I think it's both.
We didn't make up the angst.
No.
I mean,
they told on themselves. Marcus Morris after every game is saying we're soft. Terry Rozier gave you one of the best quotes of the year. Do you know which one it is?
Oh, of course. I went from the passenger seat to the trunk.
There is a player telling you on the record, essentially, I'm unhappy with what's happened to my role.
Right, of course. And why wouldn't he be? And you're absolutely right. So we all are preparing obits for the Celtics, right? I just did one for TV that'll appear as soon as they lose. And what I, you know, the opening line of it was, in retrospect, why did we think it would be this easy for the Celtics? Because Gordon Hayward hadn't played in a year. Remember, too, Kyrie's coming off his third knee surgery. And then you had these three players, Tatum, Rozier, and Brown, who, you know, discovered themselves, took their grand aspirations, came to life. And then you knew from day one, that's all good, but you're not getting as many shots and you're not going to get as many minutes. And that's just how it's going to be. Now, I will give Jaylen Brown credit. I think he's recovered from it.
Absolutely.
I like what Jaylen Brown's done, and he doesn't get enough credit for that. And, you know, I wrote a story early in this season that made him unhappy at how mightily he was struggling, because he was struggling on both ends of the floor. He figured it out. He figured it out, and he found a way to make it work. And by doing so, got himself back into the starting lineup. Tatum is the one that confounds me, Zach, because we know the talent. We know the talent, how deep it runs. But the drifting in and out, and, you know, doesn't seem to ever be at the right spot on the floor. Defensively, he's, you know, you can't even compare him to Jaylen Brown. And in fact, I was joking with someone the other day, if we ever, let's play the pie in the spy Anthony Davis sweepstakes game. If you're David Griffin, let's just say you're going to deal with the Celtics. Do you want Jaylen Brown now instead of Jason Tatum?
I don't think that is a crazy question. Now, I think I still want Tatum, but I wrote a whole piece last year, I don't remember when, summer, offseason, sometime, must have been June, July, about how Jaylen Brown was the swing piece in the Kawhi Leonard trade for Boston. And if they put him in, they got a shot. And if they don't, probably don't got a shot. And
Pop has loved Jaylen Brown from the jump.
There you go.
From the jump.
Yeah. Well, because I think Jaylen Brown, what he showed last year was the potential to be a very, very good two-way player. Now,
two-way player.
In the end, I said, yes, you have to put him into the Kawhi trade if you're Boston. You have to, because he'll never be as good as Kawhi. Kawhi is, you don't get chances
to get. Or Anthony Davis either.
Right.
Or Anthony Davis. Yeah.
But I talked to a lot of scouts and executives for that, and I asked them to compare Tatum and Brown. And most of them, the response was, well, Tatum's the better prospect because we think he can be sort of an alpha scorer in a championship level series the way Jaylen can't. But it's closer than people think. And I still think that's true.
I agree with that. And I think, you know, defensively, he really, when he's locked in, and that, you know, that's one of the problems. He's not always locked in. And, you know, he actually, his weak side defense is better than people think too. Like, he recovers, he helps. You know, these are things that Tatum either has been unwilling or has been unable to grasp in his second year. And I think I give Jason credit in that he was never, you know, when you look at all those quotes, you know, Brown called the team toxic at one point.
I forgot about that one.
Yeah. And I don't think Jason Tatum said anything of the sort. Like, I don't remember him ever throwing, gasoline on the fire. And he also, I thought, was, you know, when they were talking about, well, what if you are traded, you know, if you end up in New Orleans, he's like, then I'll be the star in New Orleans. And that's the part, right? If you're a GM or a coach that you love.
Oh, yeah.
That positive self-talk. Because all these players, it's so funny to me as I go through the league, how many of them really have confidence issues. It's kind of funny when things go bad, how they have this, you know, and of course Kyrie Irving isn't one of them, and Jason Tatum isn't one of them. And I think that's really important. And Jaylen Brown is very introspective. And again, in that piece, we're referencing it again, but the happiness piece said, you know, when you have ideas of what it's going to be and it doesn't turn out that way, that voice inside your head tends to get louder and louder. I thought that was a really interesting quote. And what he's telling you is, you know, did I have a little bit of a personal crisis over this? Yes, I did. But the fact that he could come out the other side of it, and, you know, you could argue, well, I can never argue against Al Horford being the second best player, even though he never has the numbers to back it up. Just the little things that he does makes him so, so, so important. But, you know, Jaylen Brown to me is right after him. And Horford's up. No one's talking about that. You do realize Horford's up too, right? No one's talking about that.
And I think my prediction before the season was that he would turn down the player option, which I think is 30-ish.
Right.
And do what you're suggesting Paul Millsap might do, which is, I think, what Paul Millsap will do, which is, okay, so I'll turn down this $30 million, but let's do a three-year $70 million or something. I thought Al would do that. And now, you know, there's just a lot up in the air. I think Al likes it there. I think Al likes the young guys. I'm sure that he's very frustrated by how this season has gone. And if Kyrie leaves, I don't think Al can look at that group and say, barring a big addition, and by the way, I'm sorry, Kyrie, but if you leave, whether you leave or stay, absolutely impacts where Anthony Davis goes. Absolutely impacts what New Orleans can get in a trade and how close the Lakers can get. It's all connected. I'm sorry.
Right.
But
it is.
If Kyrie leaves, I just don't know that Al can look at this team and say, I'm 30 whatever years old. I want to play for a championship. I think it can happen here. Now, I don't know if he can get himself to a place where he thinks it can happen. Maybe he doesn't care. Maybe he just loves Boston and wants to try to make it happen there. But I think what looked like a sure thing when Kyrie said what he said in October was Al comes back, Kyrie comes back, they make a big trade, bing, bam, boom, we're a championship contender for the next 5 years. Everything about it, including Horford, could go in a totally different direction.
And, you know, Al, very unusual for him, actually said, we'll see what happens or something to that effect. You know, I think everyone always loves Klay Thompson in Golden State because he always says, I want to be here. And Al, as I recall, had always said that. But there was a time recently in the last couple months where he said, well, you know, I'm going to have to take a look at it. And can you blame him? Although he did make the mistake of telling me he would play for free. I'm like, why are you doing that? You're about to be a free agent. Don't ever say that.
I loved his quote in your piece about the pleasure he took in playing on those Florida teams and the joy he took in realizing, well, this I don't have to score 25 a game for us to win. And what makes me happy is winning. And I can do all these other things that help us win, and how that has continued to inform how he played. I just thought that was a very little nice little side turn you took in that piece.
Yeah, but it's so true. He's just, you know, he's never the problem. You know, of all the problems the Celtics had, you've never once heard Al Horford's name mentioned, because he's the solution if the players would listen. And, you know, he's not the most vocal leader. He's not going to be in your face. You know, I asked him, you know, did you ever confront Kyrie about some of these issues, you know, the up and downs, because they were, you know, these guys were walking on eggshells. When Kyrie was good, they were good. When he wasn't, they weren't. And I said to Al, you know, you're a veteran. Did you ever, you know, say to him, hey, you know, this is affecting us. And he said exactly what I would expect him to say. And he said, well, Jackie, that's in-house. I'm not sharing that with you, which is why he's a great teammate.
By the way, you said eggshells. Eggshells has become one of my sort of NBA lexicon words. Because it's been used about other players. Like, people used it about DeMarcus Cousins in Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you can win at the highest level if eggshells is part of your vocabulary. And it's part of your vocabulary because of your best player. If that is the atmosphere at any extended period of time during a season, I just don't think you can win. Your best player has to set a kind of tone where eggshells is not part of your lexicon as a team. And that hasn't happened in Boston this year. And I'm not saying it's Kyrie's fault. Maybe the circumstances are that frustrating to him. Maybe whatever it is. But if people are if it's eggshells, walking on eggshells, if we're saying that, if they're saying that, you can't win that way. You just cannot win. You cannot win with that atmosphere.
Right. And I think he's tried to, you know, again, based on the talking to the guys and talking to him, that he realized, you know, I got to go this a different way. I think he did over the final month and a half. He was, you know, quietly pulling players aside, talking with them. I think the way I said it was more collaborative than confrontational. And I think they really did go into these playoffs with a pretty good feeling. But here's the problem. And everyone kept saying it. Well, they don't like each other. And I kept saying, it's not that at all. What it is they don't trust each other. And that's worse. So, you know, if you like somebody, if you don't like somebody, you know, when the game's on the line, you can hate their guts. But if you know they can make a 20-footer, you're going to throw them the ball. But if you don't, when things go bad, if you stop trusting each other, you have no chance. You have no chance.
Well, we'll see what happens tonight. I think they're going to get rolled, and all those Celtics obits will run.
What about Kyrie? What do you think Kyrie's going to do tonight?
I don't know. I mean, if you told me
he's got to have a big game. I just am shocked that I was so sure Game 4 was going to be his big game. You know, I thought he was going to take 20 shots, and I thought he was going to hit 12 of them. I really did. I thought he was going to have it because he's that talented. He really is so good.
I agree.
And I keep expecting one of these games for that to happen. And, you know, maybe it's the next one.
I think even if it happens, it's not going to matter because I think Milwaukee broke them a little bit by sweeping those two games.
I agree with that.
And
but the, doesn't But let me ask you this, though. Does it matter, like, for the future? Like, people always, every single person stops you on the street, what's Kyrie Irving going to do? I always tell them, I don't know, because I don't think he knows. So how am I supposed to know? And can Danny Ainge, who's recovering, and we're glad to hear you're recovering, Danny.
Absolutely.
I hope you're doing well.
Absolutely.
Can he sit him down and say, look, I know this didn't go the way you wanted, didn't go the way we wanted. There's some reasons why this happened. You know, personnel is going to change. If you stay, personnel is going to change because we're going to try to make a big deal.
Well,
so, you know, will that – and so it's like double-edged. Like I heard Jalen say yesterday, his teammates will help him pack. I just don't believe that.
I don't believe most of them would. And I think you're right. That's exactly what the Celtics are going to do. The Celtics are going to – and I was talking to an agent about this just an hour ago. They're going to have to at least try to get him to commit early because I don't know that Anthony Davis is a Pelican after the draft, and Kyrie Irving's free agency doesn't start until after the draft. And
right.
So I think they're going to have to try to sit him down and get a commitment early and go that way. And boy, if they get rolled tonight and it's bad, I maybe it can still happen. I don't know. It certainly wouldn't seem to help their chances of that happening.
But see, that's the part that's so frustrating, right? Because, you know, yes, this hasn't worked, but every player has to take ownership of that, including Kyrie.
Absolutely.
I think he will. I think he will. But, I mean, there's no guarantee. This is what I was talking to him about, like this idea of this will definitely make me happy. There's no guarantees anywhere you go. You can go to New York with Kevin Durant, although I just don't believe that'll happen. But fine. Let's just say for argument's sake it's going to happen. Are you sure? Are you sure that's going to make you happy? Like, there's no guarantee. And I think that's what Al was saying. Al Horford was saying, was like, look, I don't think anybody, these young guys, anybody realize we have a chance here. And he said, I've been in the league a long time and I can count the chances I've had to be special on a special team on one hand. And so I think for him, he's amazed at all this discourse and dysfunction because he knows how precious it is. He knows how fleeting it can be. And, you know, whether everybody's going to listen, I don't know. I mean, what's Jason Tatum going to say at the end of the year? What does he want to happen? Terry Rozier, are you going to re-sign him? Why would he stay based on how things are going? You know, you kind of made your choice, right, when you re-upped with Marcus Smart. So do you let him walk? It all depends, right? It all depends if Kyrie stays. It all depends if Anthony Davis is coming with him. So many variables. So many.
Well, we will see. And not only that, but they will. I talked about Jaylen Brown and Kawhi. I think there will be some looking back if Kyrie leaves and say, well, did we cash in on the right guy? But that's a discussion for another day. Jackie, I've already kept you 10 minutes longer than I said it would, but you're so good.
I know, Zach. Jeez.
I'm sorry. Please enjoy Denver. Please enjoy all that. And I'm sure I will run into you soon. There's only one Jack McMullen. Thank you for a little time.
It's only one Zach.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.